We are only hours away from Jesus' crucifixion. We've been only hours away the whole entire class period. Matt left off in verse 14, so we'll begin in 15. I'll get 15 through 21, and then on Wednesday evening, Matt will do 22 through 26. That will end up our study, and then we'll do a kind of an overview next Sunday, and our quarter will be over. Let's read this morning, beginning in the 17th chapter of the book of John, just a few verses. I'll back up to verse 13 so that we can begin the thought where Jesus says, "But now I come to thee, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy made full in themselves. I have given them thy word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world." In verse 15, where we begin our study today, it says, "I do not ask thee." Now remember, we're looking at really what this is, the Lord's Prayer. This is it is the most extensive prayer that we can see the actual words that Jesus is speaking in the whole entire New Testament. Verse 15 says, "I do not ask thee to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Thy word is truth. As thou didst send me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they themselves also may be sanctified in truth. I do not ask in behalf of these alone, but for those also who believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, even as thou, Father, are in me, and I in thee, that they also may be in us, that the world may believe that thou didst send me." Now, there are many, many things throughout these chapters that we've talked about that are very, very repetitive. But each particular thing adds another building block on the things that we're talking about. Jesus began by telling them, "Let not your hearts be troubled." We've asked the question in this class before, and we understand why those men's hearts were troubled. We've talked about the fact that our hearts are troubled. There may be some people here right now that your heart may be troubled about something. It may have been yesterday, may have been last week. If the Lord lets us all live, it may be that it's a week from now that your heart is troubled. Jesus is telling them, he's telling us, don't let your heart be troubled. Center on the right things. You know, we talked about he's feeding them. I want us to look at something, though. I want us to look at Mark chapter 16, a verse we know, all of us know. We could probably quote it from memory. Mark 16, verse 15. It says, "And he said to them," Jesus speaking, "go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation." Now, we all know that passage. But let's look over at 2 Corinthians 6 and 17. Remember what that said, go into all the world. Listen to what 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 17 says. It says, "Therefore," now listen very closely what this says, "therefore come out from their midst and be separate, says the Lord, and do not touch what is unclean, and I will welcome you." Now, that seems to be a contradiction. Some people may even say, you know, that's just a contradiction of what one says, you know, go into all the world. The other says, you know, come out of that, stay away from that. How do we reconcile that? You know, but this chapter that we're in, you know, it tells us a lot about that. Christians, disciples of Jesus Christ, these men, those apostles, those disciples, us as disciples of Jesus Christ, that's you and me. We're in the world, but we're not of the world. We can understand our separation from the world. It's not a physical separation, right? It's a spiritual separation. That's why the world hates us, isn't that correct? That's why. Because why? Because if we teach and we adhere to what God's Word says, what does the Word of God do to the world? It condemns them. It convicts them. It really flies in the face of everything our society says. You know, if we were to go ask 100 people out on the street or in the Walmart parking lot, what is truth, what kind of answer would we get? We'd probably get 100 different answers, wouldn't we? Let's think about that. Let's read another verse, though. Just one verse. And this verse, we know this verse. We can quote it by heart in Matthew, the 5th chapter. Jesus' words again, the 13th verse of the 5th chapter of Matthew. Listen to what it says. This is talking to disciples of Jesus Christ. So if we fall in that category and we are a follower of Jesus Christ, listen to what this says. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? It is good for nothing anymore except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. The way that verse starts out, it says, you are the salt of the earth. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does it mean to us to be the salt of the earth? A preservative. How many of you like country ham? There's a lot of head shaking going on, isn't it? Well, how does it get that way? I'll tell you. First, you got to get a ham. And then you got to get some salt. And you separate those two things, right? You keep them far apart from one another. Isn't that right? Isn't that how you begin the process? You keep the salt as far away from the ham as possible, right? What? No, some of the ham lovers are saying, no, that's not how that works. What do we have to do with the salt? You what?
It sort of processes.
It processes. You got to get the salt on it, don't you? It has to come in contact with it. So what that would tell us is we can't be shut up in a monastery. We've got to be spread out, just like you spread out that salt on that ham. We've got to be spread out all over the earth. Why? Todd said it's a preservative. What does a preservative do? One word. It saves, doesn't it? It's a preservative. We're the salt of the earth. We're what can save the world. We have to think about that. We're a vehicle. You know, when we ask the question, does God need us? What's our first response to that? To the question. Don't think about it. What's the first response? Does God need us? My first response is no. But we have to think about that. Did the Lord need these men? Our first response may be no. Why would he need them? He has everything. He has control of everything. He needed them to what? He had work to do. He's getting ready. In just a few hours, he's leaving. Think about it like this. He was a man. He was in human form. Think about what you would do if you only had a few hours left. And you knew that. He knows that. He's making preparation for that. He's got work to do. Is he going to be able to do it? He's going to be gone. He can't do it. He's not going to be here. He can't come in contact with the world, can he? Or can he? How is he going to do that? Through those men. How is he going to do that today?
The same way.
Through us. Through followers of Jesus. That's how he's going to do that. So, does God need us? Absolutely he needs us. Now, he doesn't need us to make our own rules. He needs us to follow his rules. And he made us all. And that's why our first thought usually is no, that God doesn't need us, but God needs you. God needs every one of us. And he needs us to do our part Because all of our parts are different. But he needs us to do that part so that his work can continue. When we talk about Jesus, and we'll talk about this a little bit in depth. When we talk about Jesus, or here's the question. Did Jesus associate with sinners? Yes, he did. Let's look at some of those in Matthew 9. In Matthew, the 9th chapter, verse 10, beginning verse 10. We'll read a couple verses there. Matthew, the 9th chapter, beginning verse 10. It says, "And it happened that as he was reclining at the table in the house, behold, many tax gatherers and sinners." It's amazing that he mixes those together. I guess they're birds of a feather, huh? Tax gatherers and sinners. We would probably still categorize tax gatherers as sinners to this day. It says they came and they were dining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why is your teacher eating with the tax gatherers and sinners?" But when he heard this, he said, "It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire compassion and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners." Do we understand that? Do we understand? Now, it's a little bit different, and I think we can understand. It's a little bit different when you and I come in contact with sinners than it is when Jesus came in contact with sinners. Let's look at Luke, the 7th chapter. In verse 39. In Luke, the 7th chapter, verse 39, it says, "Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of person this woman is who is touching him, that she's a sinner.'" Well, who is it, just exactly, that needed the help of Jesus? Who is it?
Sinners.
Look around, that's what we all are. We're all sinners. We know that. But in Hebrews, the 7th chapter, verse 26, I want you to listen to one verse. 7th chapter, Hebrews, verse 26, it says, "For it was fitting that we should have such a high priest." Listen to what Jesus was. He was holy, innocent, undefiled. Watch this. "Separate from sinners and exalted above the heavens." That's Jesus. Now, how can he be all that, but yet he lets sinners touch him? He comes in contact like the salt does the ham and preserves it. How is it that Jesus and his disciples and those who are followers of him, how is it that we can come in contact with sinners and not be influenced by them? Sometimes that's difficult, isn't it? You know, it's like we all know the illustration of putting and I wish this worked different, but when you have a bushel of apples and you put a rotten one in the middle, it's amazing that those good ones don't turn it good. Isn't that amazing how that doesn't work that way? But what happens? It works in the reverse, doesn't it? Same way. You know, I've heard people say my whole life, well, you know, they're trying to justify some sinful behavior that they have. And they say, well, you know, I think it's okay if I go in this bar. And I'm like, well, you're crazy. Well, you know, there's a lot of sinners in there. Yes, there is. Well, that'd be a good place for me to be. Let me give you a modern day illustration of that. It matters what we do. It matters where we go. It matters how we look. I had to buy a birthday card last week. And so I stopped in Kroger on Scottsville Road. And you got to walk through about 50 aisles before you find where the birthday cards are in there. And you know what aisle they're on? Anybody know? I can tell you. They're on the beer aisle. They're on the beer aisle. That must be the perfect place, beer and birthday cards. You know, I stopped. And I didn't even go in the aisle. You know why? I wasn't in there to get the beer. I was in there to get the birthday card. But I thought, you know, of all the places, why couldn't they put it with the bread? It starts with the same letter. Beer, birthday card. I mean, bread, birthday card. Why did it have to be in a beer aisle? So I went and got some other things. And then I came back. You know why I didn't want to go down that aisle? I really didn't want anybody that I knew to see me go in that aisle. Nothing wrong with going down that aisle buying a birthday card. That's not what I'm saying. I really didn't want anybody to see Brad loading that. I mean, I wasn't loading a cart full of beer. It was all full of stuff I shouldn't have anyway. Stuff I shouldn't eat. But I went down that aisle. Guess what happened? Two people. Standing there. And the thing of it was, they're both big drinkers. They're co-workers of mine. And I was trying to, it's hard to push a buggy like this. I was trying to push it like this, you know. Because the birthday card's over here, the beer's all over here. It didn't mean anything to them, but you know what? It didn't mean anything to them, but it did to me. That's why I won't go in a restaurant and sit in a bar. You know, some say, well, we're just eating. Not me. Because I don't want somebody to go in a restaurant and see me and say, he was sitting at the bar. I used to have a good friend of mine. He's dead now. He would not touch a drop of alcohol in his life. Would not. You know, I saw him one time out at a restaurant. And he had what looked like a wine glass with clear liquid in it. And he was standing with a bunch of other folks in the bar. And you know what I did? I went and asked him what he was drinking. And you know what he said? He said, you know I don't drink. And I did. It was tap water. But you know why he did that? Because he was the president of a company. And he had to portray a particular way, he thought. So he stood there with that wine glass half full of tap water. Anything wrong with drinking tap water out of a wine glass? Not that I know of. But it sure did look like I couldn't distinguish him from any of the other people around him. We need to think about that. He was separate from sinners. We need to be the kind of people that when we're on the scene and someone were to say, well, Shannon said this, and then they repeat something Shannon said, then the people on the scene, they say, oh, are you sure Shannon said that? Because the Shannon that we know don't talk like that. Is that valid? You see where I'm talking about? That matters. I never will forget, and this man's long dead, place I used to work, we used to gather for lunch. There was about 8 of us. We gathered for lunch every day that we could together. And a salesman always came in and visited us. He was a deacon in the church. Not where I went. And he'd cut up and go on and bring stuff to eat and everybody liked that and everything. And before he left one day, he said, well, I'm preaching at the church on Sunday. Y'all come to hear me. Which, that's a great thing. You know, that was a great influence on these guys. And then before he left, I went back in my office and he told the guys a dirty joke before he left. You think, after he left, you know what I heard? I listened out my door at what those other 7 men talked about. And they said, listen to that. And they were not necessarily godly people. They weren't church-going people. They said, look at that hypocrite. The very idea of him coming in here, inviting us to go hear him preach on Sunday, and then tells a dirty joke before he leaves. That does so much damage for us when we're trying to reach others. It just does. We've got to be mindful of that. You know, our text tells us that Jesus prayed as he was fixing to leave the world. He prayed not that they be taken out of the world, which that's where he was going. You know, he was going out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. What that tells us, you and me, is that he understood the influence that Satan, the evil one, was going to have on them. These guys were going to be up against some difficult things. And Jesus knew that. That's why he was trying to tell them and teach them. You know, these disciples were no more of the world than we are. But for a period of time, just like we have, they had a place. They had a place to work in the world, just like Jesus did. They would continue his mission and his work, just like we will, until he comes again. You see, verse 18 tells us that. It says, as thou didst send me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. You know, the peculiar thing about that, you know, he reiterates what he had said in verse 16. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Here we are. But in verse 18, he speaks of that, and this has not happened yet. Verse 18, where it says, as thou didst send me into the world, listen to what he says, I also have sent them into the world. He hadn't done that yet. That has not happened. That doesn't happen over until chapter 20 and verse 21. Where in 20 and 21 is where that happens, where it says, Jesus therefore said to them again, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I also send you. That was after his death and resurrection. That hadn't happened yet. But he spoke of it as, you know why? Because he knew if they did that, there was going to be success. That's a recipe for success. God, Jesus in the flesh, Jesus the Word became flesh in Jesus. Jesus was God. And if they taught those things, what did Jesus know? It would work. Now, does that mean that everybody would just be beating down the doors to come to him? Well, it hadn't happened that way up until that time, and it wasn't going to happen that way for them. There were going to be trials and persecutions. They were going to be in all of that stuff. I want you to remember three men. You remember Moses, remember Elijah, and remember Jonah. We all remember stories about them. You know, in Numbers 11 and 15, we don't have time to read these passages, but in Numbers 11 and 15, Moses prayed, please kill me. Please kill me, because it was more than he could bear. Elijah in 1 Kings 19 and 4, you remember, this is what I remember about this story. He sat down under a juniper tree. You remember that? Who wouldn't remember that? I don't even know if I know what a juniper tree is. But he sat down under one, and his request was death. Please take my life. What about Jonah? You know, I think Jonah, if there were to be a contest, and I don't mean to be flippant about that, but if there were to be a contest of where the most peculiar place to pray was, I think Jonah wins. Don't you think? I don't think anything can top that. From being in the belly of a fish? I don't even understand how that works, but I don't doubt that it did because I read it in the pages of the Bible. But in the fourth chapter, verses 3 and verse 8, he first said, take my life, and then he begged to die. They all prayed to be taken out of the world. Let me ask you a question. Did God grant their request?
Not at that time.
No, that's right. Not at that time, he did not. So when we talk about that, you know, and why, but why not? Why not?
He had more for his disciples to do.
That's right. John, you looked at my notes, I think. No, that's exactly right. They had work to do. And you know, unfortunately, it wasn't work that could be done sitting back in the easy chair with our feet up. It wasn't that kind of work. It was hard work. And it was work that persecution came from with. And it was work that difficulty came, pressure came with. We have to remember this world is not our home. And we can say that over and over and over again, but I'm going to tell you, it is so easy for us to get comfortable in this world. We have so much stuff. We have so many things. Not that we don't have struggles and trials too, but I'm going to tell you, there are days when, you know, the statement could be made, man, we've just got it pretty good here. Can we make that statement? There are a lot of days that we can. God didn't honor their request. They had a role to do what God wanted them to do. And that's what they had to do. Well, since these disciples were to remain in the world, and you know, the world would hate them, and we talked about why that was. Well, you know, the message that they preached and taught, but Jesus went further in the words that he spoke. You know, in verse 11 of this chapter, we back up a few verses, where it says, "And I am no more in the world, and yet they themselves are in the world, and I come to thee, Holy Father, keep them in thy name, the name which thou hast given me, that they may be one even as we are." He continues on. He went further than when he started in verse 11. These men were going up against the whole world. They were going up against the whole world. I brought something. I don't know if you can see that. Shannon, can you see what that says on it? I don't know if you can see that. It says Bible. Can you see that? It's a Nelson. And that, you know, it's a pretty nice Bible. It's the world's Bible. Do you know that? It's the only one I've ever seen like that. And I had to buy it. It was only a couple of bucks, but I had to buy it. And it's not a world's translation Bible. It's the world's Bible. It's the world's translation of the Bible. I don't know if you can see it. Can you see it? Can you see it? Every page is blank. But it says Bible on it. I had to buy that. You know why? This is the world's Bible. You know why? When we go out and we ask those 100 people, what's the truth? I can make my own. That's what the world does. I can write whatever I want to in here. And man, I can pack that thing around. If I hold it like that, see, and I get close enough, you can see, man, that guy's carrying a Bible. Man, I look religious, don't I? There's nothing there. And if I wrote something in it, there's nothing there. And if you wrote something in it, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but if you wrote something in it, there's nothing there. That's the world's Bible. Make your own Bible. I'm surprised that hasn't caught on. Turn to 1 John, the 5th chapter. In 1 John, the 5th chapter, verse 19. It says, "We know that we are of God, and the whole world lies in the power of the evil one." Jesus recognized the power that Satan would have on influencing these men. You see, their work could be done, but only by remaining. This is a two-part question. Their work could be done only by remaining in what? What? In the world. But they got to remain in something else. What's the second part?
In the teaching.
In the teaching. Let's use the word word. In the world and in the word. WW, that way we can remember. In the world and in the word. And that's how they can be successful. And he's praying on their behalf. That's why Jesus repeats verse 16 from verse 14. In verse 17 and 18, if you got a comment or question, raise your hand, and the guys will get to you. Jesus had first prayed for them to be protected. And how comforting that must have been. I mean, if your heart is troubled, if you're one of the disciples of Jesus Christ, if you're one of those 11 men, and Jesus is praying for your protection, is that going to calm your heart? Well, listen, if that calms your heart and that's what you think, let's keep reading because there's more to it. He prayed for them to be protected, but in 17 through 19, he prays for them to be sanctified. Now, that's a word, and we've said this with lots of words. I don't think I've used the word sanctify this week, except till now. But what does the word sanctify mean? And I would venture to say that probably no one in here has used the word sanctify this week. Possibly. Maybe you have, but possibly not. What's the word sanctify mean? Several meanings there. What's the word sanctify mean?
Truth.
What?
Truth.
Set apart. What else? How about another hard word? How about consecrate? Man, that's a big one. I hadn't used that one this week either. If I take this world's Bible and I put it over here, have I sanctified it? It's set apart from me. Okay? Well, what if I put it over there? What if I put it over there? Is it sanctified? No. It's set apart, but it's not sanctified. What? There's more to it. What else? Let's use the word, it's reserved. How about that word? It's reserved. Well, we could set this over here, and we could say it's set apart. We could say it's reserved for someone who, from the world, to come pick it up and to put what they wanted into it. But is it sanctified? Is it consecrated? No. Well, what? Let's go another step. What does that mean? Set apart. Let's stay on that. It's set apart. What's it set apart for?
Truth.
John's coming back to truth, and that's true. It's set apart for what? Holy purposes. Holy purposes. God purposes. It goes back to what John said. Truth. It's set apart for that. Sanctification is more than just a separation from sinfulness of the world. It's a dedication to the business of equipping ourselves or preparing ourselves for our mission. Whose definition of that? It's mine. It's the same as these men, our preparation. I tried to associate some numbers with this. And I checked on it. This was this way several years ago and remains the same today. That fathers in the United States, this is an average, spend 7 minutes per day talking with their children. Mothers spend 11 on average, 11 minutes a day talking with their children. I'm talking about uninterrupted. That 7 minute figure was that way several years ago, and I checked, it's still that way in 2019. It is still that way. And let me just talk from a worldly standpoint. This has no, Well, it has to do with the Bible, but I'm just talking from the world standpoint. Our world cannot raise children by spending only 7 minutes per day in communication with them. I'm talking about uninterrupted. You know, we don't have, you know, we can't do anything without, you know, doing that. I mean, I wish all those things would just stop working. We'd be a lot better off. We, as a nation, as a country, we cannot be successful raising children. I'm not talking about godly children. I'm talking about just children in general. Helping them to understand what's right and what's wrong in society, which just about everything's right in society now. But we cannot do that. You know, David, it was either David or Johnny mentioned the fact about our classes here and that how this is not everything that we can give because it's so little. And that's what I tried to put a number to. In this class, I figured out we missed one class period for the meeting. But other than that, I figured up the number of hours. We have 18 hours of actual in the class time this quarter. Okay? You know what that equates to in one quarter? 12 minutes a day. If we spread this, just the time we're in this classroom. Okay? That holds true for the classrooms back there. So what that's saying is if we spread that our class period out per day, we've spent 12 minutes a day in our study. You see, do we understand why that's not enough? Well, I figured up the preparation for a 3-month class, the preparation time for the teacher this is a wide range. It's somewhere between 96 and 102 hours of preparation time. I'm talking about time sitting behind the desk with your head down in the Bible, studying and preparing for the class. And just, this is my opinion, and I don't always get to do this, but I would err on the 192 hours in preparation for the 3-month class rather than on the other side. And that's just me. That is important for us to do. But we cannot. We have to be prepared. You know, and our excuse is, and I've done this too when we're talking about raising children. I've done this too. But we spend quality time. That's a lie. That is a lie. We've got to, you know, there's nothing wrong with quality time. We got to put in the time. And the problem with that is, the older that I get, the more I see that that's just right. But our world doesn't see that. Our world doesn't even see that, just how to be a good citizen. Much less how to be a citizen of the kingdom of God. That's what we've got to worry about. We've got to be sanctified. That's what sanctified means. That's what we've got to do. That's important for us to do. Now, are we going to be able to do that every day? You know what? We're going to fail miserably at it sometimes. But you know what? We've got to get back up the next morning, put our boots on, and start at it again. That's just what we've got to do. I'm going to fail. Shannon's going to fail. And you know what? We can't beat ourselves up over that. You know what? Because sometimes we're going to fall down. But we can't stay down. We've got to get back up and dust ourselves off and take off again. And if we fell behind, we got to do it again. I'm working right now on a reading plan that I'm going to work on in 2020. Just me. And I hadn't told anybody about this, so I'll tell y'all and you can keep me accountable for it. I'm going to try. And this is something new. I've never done this particular thing before. I'm going to read 3 chapters I'm going to try to read 3 chapters of the New Testament every day in 2020. And you know what that means I can do? In 3 months, I'll have read through the entire... I'm going to center on the New Testament. I will have read through the New Testament one time in 3 months. You know what that means? In a whole year, I'll have read through the New Testament 4 times. And I'm going to tell you, that's not that great of a thing, I'll just tell you. Because there's some men I know that to help to influence me, and I listen to what they've done in the past, and you know, a lot of them, They'll read the New Testament. This is in addition to other things they do. They'll read the New Testament through 7 times in a year. I don't think I could do that. That sounds like too much. But you know what? I believe that I'll grow if I'll do that. And you know what? If I may not be able to do it every day because I'll come home and I'm tired and I don't want to do that. And I want to sit in my recliner in fourth gear and I don't want to do it. But you know what? That's okay. But tomorrow, read 6. And you know what? I'm hoping I can do that. That's in addition to other things that I want. There are a lot of things that I really want to study about this year. And I need to do that. I need to do a lot of things. That's going to help my spiritual life, I hope. You know, I need to work. I'm going to have to buy new belts, new pants if I don't work on some other problems. And I'm hoping I can do that. But I'm putting that off till January 1 too. You know, but I need to be up and I need to get to walking and exercising and not eating like I eat and all that stuff. And hopefully at the end of 2020, I hope I'm more spiritual. I hope I'm more prepared. I also hope physically I'm more prepared. Because right now, I'll just tell you, I don't feel like doing it. I don't feel like going out and doing that. But I need to. And you know what? That's up. That's on me. That is on me. So, you know, and I'll just tell you, don't be like my mother and say, well, you don't need to eat that because when you tell me that, I'll just eat it to spite you. Okay? So don't do that. But encourage me in that. Encourage me to help my spiritual life and encourage me to help my physical life. And I'm going to try to do that and I'll try to help you do the same thing. And like I say, if we fail, you know what? Let's just fail and start over the next day and we'll be successful. As long as we stay in the Word. We're going to be in the world if the Lord lets us live. We're going to be here. This is where we are. And if we'll stay in the Word, then we'll be successful. The Lord knew it. He knew that we needed to prepare ourselves. He said, sanctify them in the truth. Well, what's the truth? Well, we said what the world says is the truth. It's a blank piece of paper that I just put on there what I think is the truth. But Jesus is speaking to God and he says the word, he gives us the answer, thy word is truth. So the purpose for this prayer was to reach a lost world by teaching what? Goes back to what John said. The truth. It's by teaching, not by saying, oh, do whatever you want to do and you'll be okay and you just let me do whatever I want to do and I'll be okay. That's not going to save the world. Jesus speaks in verse 18, like we said before, as if that had already happened, but it doesn't happen until 2021, not year, but chapter 20, verse 21. Jesus is saying to these men, here's what he says in verse 19. I'm offering myself to you as a sacrifice. You know, the great thing about that is Jesus was both our high, he was their high priest. He remains our high priest, but he was also the victim. He was the victim. He was, by the offering of himself, he was giving himself to God. That's what he was doing. And he was saying, you know what, God, it's your way. It's your way. And I submit all of myself to that. And that's how that's got to be. Jesus adds more on that when he talks in 20 and 21 about unity. You know, he started talking about unity back in verse 11, but he continues that in 20 and 21. There's some great things there. You know, he prays for, this is the great thing, when we talk about it doing their hearts good and it not letting their hearts be troubled. And I'm going to shoot the clock there because we need another minute or two. But here is one thing, the point we have to make. In verse 20 it says, but I do not ask in behalf of these alone, but for those also who believe in me through their words. Who he's praying for there? He's praying for future disciples. That means he's praying for you and I. So let me tell you something. If that would make your heart feel good, that the very fact that one of those disciples, one of those apostles of Jesus Christ, and he's praying for them, he's praying for us too. He's already did that and he will continue to do that. He is our advocate and that should help us want to live for him. And what we have to remember in this is within just mere hours, Jesus would die on the cross. He wanted us all as believers to be one. And how are we going to do that? You know, well, we're going to do that by following his word, or like John says, his truth. He and the Father were one in mind, purpose, in love, and in action. We have to mimic that. We've got to be just like that. Sorry I took extra time. Matt will pick up there on Wednesday evening and finish us out through the chapter, and we'll wrap everything else up next Sunday. Thank you for listening.